If you've ever thought about moving to France and living the French dream, you're going to love today's episode, as that's exactly what I did in 2016. And I'm about to tell you the whole story. You'll hear all about how hubby and I finally found our dream home, the trials and tribulations of renovating an old French farmhouse, and learning to speak French. Not to mention the real life history we discovered about our property and what remains of the castle on which our home now stands. But before we do that, I do want to remind you to go to lifeinmoralfrance.com/podcast, where you'll discover everything you ever wanted to know about France. You'll better sign up for special offers and deals on hotels, and of course, be notified every time we release a new episode. Bonjour and welcome to the Life in Rural France podcast. I'm Kylie Lang, a British blogger living in the beautiful Charente region of rural France with my long-suffering hubby Richard and border collie Lottie. Now, unlike most people, moving to France hasn't always been my dream, but that didn't stop me jumping at the chance when hubby, who has never lived anywhere other than Leeds, England, suggested we go live in France. And 6+ years later, we're still here, living in a property we've renovated and a life that if you told me 10 years ago I'd be leading, I would not have believed you. But it's not all about me on this podcast. I'm going to be sharing the hidden gems I've discovered in France, some fascinating stories about French history, and plenty of culture thrown in for good measure. So I invite you to join me on this journey of living in a tiny French commune, getting to grips with learning French, singing to ABBA in the fields, walking my dog, and discovering the joys of the rural life. One thing I can promise you is it won't be boring. And who knows what we might discover together on this rollercoaster ride of life in rural France. Well, hello and welcome to this very first episode of the Life in Rural France podcast, which is so exciting for me. Now, if we've not met before, my name's Kylie Lang, and I'm here to tell you all about my journey that saw me move to France, actually to live in the southwest French countryside in a beautiful region called the Charente, which is in Department 16. So throughout this podcast, I really hope I can inspire you. I want to talk to you about what life is really like in France and, of course, some of the fabulous characters that I've met along the way. And hopefully I'll be busting a few French myths. I might make you laugh at some of the ridiculous things that have happened to me during my time here and introduce you to others with their own tales and stories, some French and some definitely not. And it really doesn't matter if you're a Francophile wanting to soak up as much information as possible about living the French dream, or if you're really just looking to be entertained and regaled with tales of living the rural life. You're very welcome, and I hope you're going to enjoy what's on offer. But one of the questions I get asked the most is, why France? What is it that brought you here? So what I wanted to do with this first episode is to share my story of how I ended up living in France. So hopefully you can get to know me a little bit better before we go on this whole podcast journey together. So I guess for a lot of people, and certainly a lot of the people I've met over here, they have this dream of living in France, but not everyone makes that dream a reality. And I think my story is actually more one of luck than judgment, or even dreaming, if I'm being totally honest. You see, unlike most people, I actually haven't had a lifelong love affair with France and all things French. I mean, yeah, I took O-level French at school in the UK. I was the last year, actually, of the O-levels before they went into what they have now, which is GCSEs. But I also took German. And actually, I was better at German than I was at French. I even went on a 2-week exchange in Hamburg to help with my German. So I certainly can't say I was following a dream after I fell in love with France and the French language. Actually, truth be told, the only reason I was doing 2 languages at all was because it meant I didn't actually have to choose geography or RE, as it was called in those days, otherwise known as religious education. I absolutely hated both those subjects. So French and German, better of 2 evils for me. What I will say, though, is I have always loved traveling, ever since I can remember. My favorite game to play when I was a kid was, and this is what I called it, the pack up and move game. And this is where, I don't know if any of you can relate to this, but this is where I would pack up all the inhabitants of my doll's house. I'd then move them to a new place. And I've always had a very vivid imagination. And as a kid, quite often the places that I would be packing up and moving to would be based on places I might have read about in an Enid Blyton book or even magicked up in my own head. And those moves were always packed with adventure. There was invariably a big battle of some description that had to be won before we were able to reach our destination and set up home in our new location. And then, of course, no sooner had I settled the inhabitants of my doll's house than we were off again. My mum and dad always used to say I was like a gypsy. I was constantly moving from one home to another. But no matter where I was, I always seemed to settle pretty easily. And when I got bored, which was quite often, I'd up and move again. In fact, I'm probably one of the very few people who can say they've actually lived on three continents. Yep, continents, not countries. And that wasn't in my imagination. That was real. And of course, being British, obviously I've lived on, you know, the continent of Europe, but that isn't the only country in Europe I've lived in. I also lived in Spain when I was 20, and I'm here now in France. The other two continents were North America and Australia. And first, I went to America. I was 21, and I spent 6 months there as a nanny. Ironic, really, because I had no nannying qualifications. I wasn't particularly keen on children when I was 21. And I couldn't drive, which is usually a prerequisite of being a nanny. But I didn't let a little thing like that stop me. I had a great time in Wisconsin. It's the dairy state of America. And it was that adventure that just left me wanting more. Fast forward a few years, I met and fell in love with an Aussie. And moved with my daughter, who was 5 at the time, lock, stock and barrel to Australia. I spent just over 10 years there, mostly in the city of Melbourne, where coffee is off the charts. I still miss it now. And I absolutely loved it. The Aussie life suited me down to the ground. Although, true to form, I did manage to move house a total of 7 times in that 10-year period. So, I don't know, maybe my next business should be as a removalist. Anyway. It was whilst we were in Australia that my daughter fell in love with figure skating and she started to skate at a competitive level. And to cut a very, very long story short, it was this passion for figure skating that saw us leave Australia and move to America. Summer, my daughter, she was really focused, driven, motivated, wanted to go as far as she could with the sport. So she made the choice to represent Britain rather than her adopted home of Australia. And we spent 2 years living in Southern California so she could train at the famous ice rink there, Ice Castles, which actually sadly closed in 2014. But during all this time, I'd got divorced. And when Ice Castles closed, we made the move back to the UK. And it wasn't all smooth sailing. I really missed my life in Oz and America. But for me, one of the best things to come out of that move was I met my second husband, Richard, who I'm still very happily married to. And it was with him that the idea of a move to France all came about. And we were actually away on a long weekend in Scotland. It was February. There was snow all around us. And I remember asking him that all important question, would he ever consider living anywhere other than the UK? And you've got to remember that unlike me and my globe-trotting lifestyle, Richard had never lived outside of West Yorkshire, let alone the UK. So I have to say, I was pretty impressed when he said he wouldn't rule it out and he'd be willing to give it a go. So naturally, the next question was where? Which country could we or would we consider calling home? And it was him, not me, that suggested France. Now, I have to be totally honest here and say I was a little hesitant because despite all my globe-trotting and all the countries I've lived in, they all have one thing in common, English as a native language. And I did wonder, how would I go living in a country where they don't speak English and I don't speak French? You can't count high school French. And besides which, my high school French was more than a little rusty. And let's face it, they never teach you anything helpful at school. I mean, some of the classic phrases I remember from our French oral lessons were things like, the window is open, la fenêtre est ouverte, and le chat est sous la table, the cat's under the table. They don't count. And they're certainly not very helpful. I have never used either of those phrases. But I'm never one to let a little thing like language get in the way. So I did actually approach the idea with my usual level of enthusiasm. I had absolutely no clue about French geography. Didn't know one region in France from another. So being, you know, the nice, considerate person that I am, it made sense for Richard, hubby, to pick the area. And France was his choice, after all, and yeah, he'd been there quite a few times on holiday, so it only seemed fair to let him pick. And his first suggestion was certainly adventurous because he loves mountain ranges, especially snowy ones. I think he was a bit inspired as well by our mini break in Scotland because he suggested we look at the Pyrenees. I literally didn't have a clue where this was, but it sounded like fun. And hubby showed me where it was on the map, and I quite liked the idea that it was right near the Spanish border. So we booked a trip, and this was Easter 2015, to go and see what we thought of the Pyrenees and whether we'd like to live there. Now, admittedly, this was more of a holiday than a reconnaissance trip, and we stayed in this beautiful little place called Arène-Marsu, and it was in the Haute Pyrenees, and it was tucked away off the beaten track. In fact, just the week before we'd arrived, it had been almost impassable, and they'd not really been able to get out to the shops because they'd been snowed in. However, it kind of, you know, gone by the time we got there, so we were quite lucky. And we did have a wonderful time exploring up and down the mountains, visiting different places, but as much as we both loved the area and the time we spent there, we did agree it was just a bit too remote. That is something to consider when you're thinking about moving to a country where you don't speak the language. You know, I just had ideas of the snow causing us problems, potentially being stranded, and being stuck up a snowy mountain in the middle of winter wasn't really doing it for me. So we moved on to the next option. And we'd met a few people during our trip to the Pyrenees who'd all told us the same thing, and that was try the Dordogne. Apparently, countryside was stunning, weather, which is really important for me. I'm such a sunshine girl. I need lots of sunshine. But apparently in the Dordogne, 2,000 plus hours of sunshine a year, sounding good. And it's a popular area for English speakers as well. Now, I will say, living in an area that had loads of Brits was not a draw card for me. I was definitely more of the mind of, you know, the whole idea of moving to France was to live a French life and not look for some version of the life I had in the UK. But the pictures I'd seen did look amazing. It didn't hurt to look. So we quickly booked our next trip over so that we didn't lose momentum. You know, you've got to keep going. But this time we had a bit more of a plan. So rather than booking a holiday, I booked us a long weekend full of property viewing. We did our research before we went over, and I'd earmarked six properties that we wanted to see. And on paper, they all looked fantastic. They had everything we needed. Four bedrooms, a room we could use as an office, loads of outdoor space, and all of them had been recently renovated. Yeah. It turned out that all the properties we wanted to view were with a property company, which was fine. They were called Allée Française, which has actually now, unfortunately, they've closed after 20 years. But it was planned that we would spend the day with a bloke called Richard, same name as my hubby. We were meeting him in a little village that was kind of like a central point for all our viewings. And then we'd get in the car with him and he would take us from property to property. Well, the Dordogne itself didn't let me down. It felt like it had pulled out all the stops. It was a stunning day. The sun was shining. We were driving through the rolling hills. Seriously, it was breathtaking. And we barely saw another car. And each village we drove through just seemed to get prettier than the last. It was just like I don't know, stepping back in time to a completely different era. You know, it was like nobody had touched these villages in years and there were no people around. And the people we did see were kind of like characters from a book. And I knew it. I was falling in love with this region. I could absolutely see myself spending my days immersed in this life of sunshine, sunflower fields, peace and quiet. Unfortunately, the properties themselves, they fell short. None of them were right. It was so disappointing because I'd really built these properties up in my mind. But mostly they were just too small. And our plan wasn't to downsize. This wasn't going to be a holiday home for us. It was going to be somewhere we were going to be living in. So it needed to tick a few boxes. And I was actually quite surprised that I was able to keep my sensible head on and not just rush in without the thought of the consequences of what I was doing. But the other thing was that none of them had the right space for a very lively and extremely precocious border collie, Lottie. She would have escaped from most of them within minutes. She could escape from Fort Knox, trust me. And so we were disappointed, but we weren't discouraged. And over the next few months, we had quite a few long weekends looking at property in France. And finally, we thought we'd found the one. It was an old schoolhouse. And it was buried deep in the Dordogne and it just looked out over the fields. It was perfect. There was a village within walking distance, so that ticked a box. It had a boulangerie, that ticked another box. And it also had a decent amount of land, which was fenced in, so it was perfect for Lottie. The one drawback wasn't actually in a fit state to live in. So there was a kitchen of sorts. There was no working bathroom. None of the bedrooms were really habitable. And the artist that was currently in residence there, who was renting it from the person who owned it, was living in the room that had once been the schoolroom. So this property used to be a school. But it was this room, along with this huge sweeping staircase that led to the rooms upstairs, that really, really drew me in. I remember being completely swept up in the romance of the idea of what a place like this would be like to live in. Screw the practicalities of making it habitable. I was already visualizing myself living there. I could absolutely imagine all those children from a bygone era sitting in the schoolroom doing their lessons. And of course, me, as Lady of the Manor, gracing that staircase every day, I was having my own Downton Abbey moment and was completely sucked into the dream of what this place could be. And I haven't even mentioned the front door. Well, it had one of those huge front doors that you just knew would open up onto a really imposing hallway, which in this case included that fabulous sweeping staircase. Alas, it was not meant to be. Hubby, he was so good. He allowed me a couple of weeks of dreaming. And then he brought me back down to earth with a huge bump, reminding me that if we bought that property, we'd spend the next few years camping out every time we came over, because every spare minute would be spent renovating. And not just one room, every inch of the property, starting with the plumbing. I was not going to be happily curled up in a swing chair, spending my time reading a book in the sunshine or eating croissants and drinking wine. I would be donning overalls and working my butt off. And the final nail in the coffin was the reminder that neither of us have ever renovated anything before. We had no idea what we were doing, and we both still had full-time careers, which demanded massive amounts of our time. Escape to the chateau, Dickie Strawbridge style. This was not going to be. And that's before he even got started on the price, which admittedly was a bit of a sticking point as it was the top end of our budget. And the idea was to be mortgage free when we moved over, not riddled with debt. So though it pained me to admit it, I knew by the time we'd have made the place livable and carried out the necessary renovations, we would have probably had to borrow a substantial amount of money. Probably as much as we paid for the property in the first place. So with a really heavy heart, we didn't put in an offer and we resigned ourselves to starting all over again. I do remember feeling completely and utterly dejected. You know, surely it shouldn't be this hard. I've always been a big believer in listening to my gut instinct. If things are meant to happen, obstacles shouldn't constantly be put in the way. In other words, in my head, the path to finding our dream home in France should be so much easier than what it was turning out to be. Luckily, though, I'm made of stronger stuff than that. And after a week of feeling sorry for myself, I was back on the trail of French house hunting. And it was during one fortuitous week in June. We were sat chatting to Bobby, who was the English owner of the gîte that we stayed in when we came over. He suggested, why don't you try the next department on from the Dordogne? It's called the Charente. Never heard of it. But then there was a lot of places in France I'd never heard of, so I wasn't going to let that be a deciding factor. By his reckoning, property prices in the Charente were around 22% cheaper than in the Dordogne, you know, due to it basically being relatively unknown. So there were a lot of deals to be had, and he wasn't wrong. The next day, we dutifully drove to the Charente and started to look at the real estate agents there, and we couldn't quite believe what we were seeing. The property prices were ridiculously low. Value for money, astounding. Oh, and don't get me started on the location. It was a slice of French heaven. So we returned to the UK with, hope in our hearts. And the promise of returning in a couple of weeks with a list of properties that I was going to find. So we booked our next trip for the end of June. It coincided with my birthday on the 1st of July. And we had a list of 7 properties to see over 2 days. And the flights at that time were Thursday and a Sunday. So everything needed to be squeezed into the Friday and Saturday. And we were both really excited. And I had a feeling. But after viewing 4 properties on the Friday, which were the properties I'd been the most excited about on paper, we still hadn't found one we wanted to put an offer in on. None of them were exciting me. Now, I don't know if you can relate to this at all, but for me, I can't live in a house where I can't immediately visualize where my Christmas tree is going to go. It's a huge deciding factor for me. And none of the houses we'd seen on the Friday allowed me to do that. I just couldn't visualize where my Christmas tree was going to go. And I remember sitting in the garden at Bobby's jeep that night. I was staring out over the fields. It was filled with, actually it wasn't filled with beautiful sunflowers at that point because they don't come out until later. I can't remember what was in the field or something. And I just had that feeling of, am I ever going to find what I'm looking for? I think that's a song, isn't it? Anyway, I'm not going to sing. The hard part was, it wasn't even as though any of the houses were horrible. They weren't. They were all okay. And that was the problem. I didn't want okay. I wanted blow me away. I wanted that light bulb moment of, oh my God, this is the place I can see me living in. And of course, it's the place I can see where my Christmas tree is going to go. I could see hubby was frustrated too, but we still had Saturday to go. So I tried to put a positive face on the whole thing. But deep down, I wasn't really holding out much hope as I knew the 3 properties that we had lined up on paper, at least, they just weren't as good as the ones that we'd seen the previous day. In fact, the last property we were going to see was almost certainly not right. I only added it kind of last minute because, well, I didn't want to only look at 3 properties. I wanted to look at 4. So I added it. So this time around, we'd gone through a different property agent called Leggetts. And if you've ever looked for property in France, you'll know there's a Leggetts in nearly every town. A bit like in the UK where there's a pub on every corner. The agents we were meeting were sisters and they were English. They'd been living in the Charente for quite a few years. So their knowledge was good. Of the local area. And the first property we saw, it was another bust. It was a really strange combo of old and even older. And it just had a weird smell that I couldn't ever imagine being able to get rid of. And it also had what I was beginning to realize was a real French thing. And that was they used curtains instead of cupboard doors. So weird. Not my cup of tea at all. I want doors on my cupboard, not funny little curtains that don't quite fit. I mean, don't get me wrong. I realize all these things are easily changed, but it's funny how first impressions stick with you. And sometimes you just, I don't know, you can't see past that point to the potential of the property. And the really strange thing is that I'm a former event designer and wedding stylist. So I'm used to going into really disgusting ballrooms with gross carpets and horrible walls. And I can see right past the hideousness of that decor. I can visualize events for my clients there. I don't know, but some unknown reason, I just couldn't apply those skills to the houses I was seeing in France. I don't know, maybe I was just too close to it. Who knows? Anyway, it was getting towards the end of, you know, yet more unsuccessful viewings, and I was starting to get really depressed. I had that sinking feeling. I felt like we're never going to find what we're looking for, and we'd go back to the UK again without anything. And we literally had that one property to see, the one I'd added in desperation. It was in this little village called Saint-Front, spelt Saint-Front, and it wasn't looking hopeful. And that's where I was wrong. So here is a lesson, something to remember for those of you looking for houses in France. Never write off a property before viewing it, because so often the details that are described by the real estate agent, they just don't do it justice. They leave out so much. And in this case, they just happened to leave off the fact that it had three barns with the property, not just barns plonked on the property adjoining the house. They were ripe for renovation. There was also a roof terrace. I mean, it wasn't fully developed, but it was the makings of a roof terrace. It just needed to be developed. Anyway, I'm jumping ahead of myself here. The last property was on a street called Chez Le Coq. No sniggering, please. And it went round in a semicircle with the property we were looking at on the best part of that semicircle with uninterrupted views of the countryside. And as we walked into the property, I got that feeling, the one that had been eluding me throughout my search, the feeling that I belonged here. And it was without doubt that it was love at first sight. As we walked into the property, I got the feeling, the one that had been eluding me throughout my search, the feeling that I belonged here. I, without a doubt, it was love at first sight. And as I walked through the door, the front door, into this old kitchen with flagstone floor, big wood burner, I just knew I was meant to live here. And even the long rabbit hutch that was running the length of the kitchen, I kid you not, there was a rabbit hutch, complete with rabbits, it didn't put me off. In fact, it kind of added its own weird element of charm. And of course, the all-important problem of where was I going to put my Christmas tree was solved as well, because I found not one, but two places where I knew my tree could go. And as we walked through the kitchen, there was a set of two steps, some going up, some going down, but they both seemed to be leading somewhere. Oh, I just couldn't wait to explore what else this house had to offer. And it appeared to be on multiple levels. There were lots of different spaces, and it just kept going and going. And I was like a kid at Christmas. I rushed from one room to another, could hardly contain my excitement. And I kept waiting for a drawback, a problem, or an issue to reveal itself. But nothing happened. It just kept getting better and better. And so directly up the steps from the kitchen was the main bathroom. And as I opened the door, oh my God, I've never got so excited about a bathroom before, but it was beautiful. It had this old thick wooden beam running across the top of the sink, and it was set into an old fashioned wooden cabinet with exposed stonework above the sink. It was just stunning. We found out after we bought the property that until 20 years ago, there'd been a massive tree sitting in the middle of where the bathroom now is. And it was a massive renovation project by some English owners who'd had the property for quite a few years as a holiday home prior to the French couple having it, who we bought it from. And then there was a set of stairs next to the bathroom. These led up to the main bedroom, which was on the top floor, the third floor. And it kind of ran the length of the house. It was massive, but it was really dark and hot up there. I remember thinking I need to put a skylight in there, which we've now done. And there was a small ensuite bathroom. And then something that really caught my eye was this little tiny nooky window that just looked down into the lounge below. Well, we now know why that window is there. It actually plays a part in heating the bedroom in winter because it's directly above the wood burner in the lounge. So the heat from the fire travels up into the nooky window and then into the bedroom. It's a great way of heating. I mean, we do have a radiator in there as well. I'm not one for being cold and I refuse to skimp on heating. But the lounge, piece de resistance or what, it still has lots of old beams. So it's got really high cathedral style ceilings. wooden floor, and it's got this really uniquely designed curved wall behind which was another bedroom and had the wood burner, which was quite a modern one, fairly newly installed. And it wasn't like the big, huge wood burner down in the kitchen that was sat in this massive fireplace. It was much smaller. Then as we made our way back down into the kitchen, we realized there was another two bedrooms, a double and a single, plus a strange little room with no windows, which is now our laundry. Everywhere we went revealed more. It was like the house that kept on giving. Every room seemed to have its own character, and the whole place was just beyond quirky, but not in a bad way when you say quirky because you can't think of anything good to say. Seriously, love at first sight. Knew I had to have it. And as for those barns, well, I say barns, two of them were, but one was more like an open-fronted hangar. It had this huge iron beam in the middle, not much else. And as I stood there, I remember thinking, this hangar is going to be my office. It's where I'm sitting right now. I could see it was going to be a place where I'd just sit and stare out over the French countryside. In my head, I'd already added the first floor, put in bifold doors that would stretch the length of the barn. I'd transformed the dirty sort of, there was no floor in it, into my own little slice of heaven. And as I stood there, hubby was up on the roof terrace doing exactly the same thing. He was just grinning down at me. And we both knew it was over. The search was done. We'd found our French version of forever. And all we had to do was get our offer accepted. And the rest, as they say, was history. Our first offer, yep, it was accepted. And 3 months later, we picked up the keys to number 10 Chez Le Coq. And we've never looked back. We didn't live there straight away. We spent the first year renovating what was the single barn into a big kitchen. So I now have two kitchens. Don't ask me why. We call it the old and the new kitchen. The old kitchen is the winter kitchen, and the new kitchen, which is bloody massive, it's in a barn after all, is the summer kitchen. It's the entertaining kitchen. And the hangar, yes, it became my office. But I will say, renovating in France was probably one of the most stressful things I have ever done. Renovating in France is stressful anyway, but doing it at distance, which we were, wasn't easy. Mind you, it didn't really get any better once we were over there. Getting hold of building supplies, it's just not as easy as it is in the UK, and everything costs twice as much. Then there's the cowboys you encounter. Now, luckily, one of my French neighbours, Stefan, he did some of the work. You'll hear a lot about Stefan actually on this podcast because he really is the French version of Del Boy. Now, if you don't know who that is, go to YouTube, look up Only Fools and Horses. It's an English comedy show from the 80s starring David Jason, and he plays a wide boy, you know, always ducking, diving, doing a little bit of this, a little bit of the other. Well, imagine Del Boy with a French accent. You got Stefan. That's him. And Stefan, who my hubby now works with, ironically, renovated my office hangar, and he did a really good job. I've got lovely pointed yellow Charente stone walls. I've got the entire top floor as my office, and we've got this massive balcony running the length of the barn, which you can sit out on in, you know, in the summer. It's heaven. But it wasn't all plain sailing. Everything took three times longer than it should have done. The new kitchen we had built in the single barn used English builders who were complete and utter cowboys. We won't focus on that for now, but they ballsed up our roof terrace as well. Less said about that, the better. And we still have half a barn to finish off, but I've got to be honest, my appetite for renovation somewhat waned. After a while, that sound of workmen, it just begins to drive you insane. And you want to tell them all to, how do I put this politely, F off. You just get sick of dirty boots tramping through your kitchen, them using your toilets and not leaving them particularly clean, and just generally being really annoying. So for the minute, the middle barn is on hold until I feel mentally strong enough to deal with it. And I should probably tell you, the size of our house really is ridiculous for two people. Well, three if you count Lottie. And I think hubby said it's the size of four average-sized detached English houses. But you know what? I don't care. I'm completely in love with it. And there's the history of the place too. So being a complete history geek, a little while ago, I decided to find out more about the history of Chez Le Coq. So I went up to the local mairie to see the mayor to find out what he had on the history of our commune. And it turns out that it originally was part of a large castle. In fact, just in front of my property are some of the old castle walls. There's a well that serviced this part of the castle and an old bread oven. Now, apparently, we're supposed to fire the bread oven up once a year and feed bread to the village. And unfortunately, as hubby and I are the owners of said bread oven, it's our responsibility. Thankfully, nobody has held us to it as yet. And since Claude, one of my other neighbours, an old French farmer, rammed it with his tractor, it's kind of looking a bit worse for wear. Stefan has the old pigeonier on his land, or pigeonier, and you can kind of just feel the history coming out of every old building in Chaix-le-Coq. I'm still researching when the castle was actually built, but from what I found out so far, our house would have been in the courtyard area of the castle, probably used for the animals and the staff who looked after them. Oh my God, if only these walls could talk. I love nothing better than sitting on the old castle wall in the summer, closing my eyes and imagining what life would have been like in the castle at Chaix-le-Coq in the 12th century. You see, we live very close to some of the sites where the Knights Templar are buried, which for me is just fascinating. The Knights Templar, in case you don't know, were formed in the 12th century, and their job was to protect pilgrims who were en route to the Holy Land. But actually, they were warriors first and men of God second. People were scared of them for their military prowess. There weren't many battles that they didn't win, and they collected an obscene amount of wealth, which, as you can imagine, led to a lot of jealousy. Their military order was eventually crushed by Philip IV, King Philip IV, in the 14th century, and a lot of them were burnt at the stake, and they were completely wiped out. But just 15 minutes down the road from me in Mandebois is an old ruin of a Knights Templar chapel, and I secretly imagine them coming to the castle at Chaix-le-Coq and stabling their horses in what's now our house on their way to the Holy Land. I know, it's insane, but it's one of the reasons I love living in France. The history, it's just unbelievable. So now you know how I ended up living in rural France. You know all about the things I daydream about. You know my ever so slightly weird connection to the Knights Templar. But there is so much more to my story than how I got here in the house I now call home. And I can't wait to share more with you through this podcast and regale you with my tales of traveling all around France, not just in the rural areas, talking to you about the culture, the wonderful history of this country, and oh my goodness, those medieval villages that look like they have jumped right out of the pages of a fairy tale book. And of course, there's my challenges learning French, and trust me, they've been challenges, and navigating those murky waters of Chaix-le-Coq. Then there's my French neighbours, Stefan, Claude, Benoit. And of course, my not so French neighbours, Simon and Alan, but more about them another day. As we start off this podcast journey together, I thought it would be fun to kickstart things with some of the pros and cons of living the rural life in France, because it is something I get asked about a lot. So in the next episode, I'm going to be sharing some of the pros and cons of living the French dream. I'm going to talk about the ups, the downs, the good, the bad, warts and all. I'm going to share it. So I hope you are ready for that. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Life in Rural France podcast. Remember to visit lifeinruralfrance.com/podcast to get notified every time I release a new episode. And if you enjoy the podcast, I'd love you to leave me a review and subscribe. And don't forget to send in your questions for Listener of the Week, where I answer your questions about France in the show. So until the next time, I hope I filled your life with a sprinkle of French sunshine and a lot of French fun. So now you know how I ended up living in rural France. You know all about the things I daydream about. You know my ever so slightly weird connection to the Knights Templar. But there is so much more to my story than how I got here in the house I now call home. And I can't wait to share more with you through this podcast and regale you with my tales of traveling all around France, not just in the rural areas, talking to you about the culture, the wonderful history of this country, and oh my goodness, those medieval villages that look like they have jumped right out of the pages of a fairy tale book. And of course, there's my challenges learning French, and trust me, they've been challenges, and navigating those murky waters of Chez Lecoq. Then there's my French neighbours, Stéphane, Claude, Benoit, and of course my not so French neighbours, Simon and Alan, but more about them another day. As we start off this podcast journey together, I thought it would be fun to kickstart things with some of the pros and cons of living the rural life in France, because it is something I get asked about a lot. So in the next episode, I'm going to be sharing some of the pros and cons of living the French dream. I'm going to talk about the ups, the downs, the good, the bad, warts and all. I'm going to share it. So I hope you are ready for that.